The title for this conference is How to Be Happy in Our Christian Vocation. St. Teresa of Avila once remarked, "All the way to heaven is heaven too." Someone has said, "There are no sad saints." An unhappy Christian should be a contradiction. We know how Jesus set down in the Beatitudes the basic things that need to be done in order to be his disciple. And as it is frequently translated, each of those things begins with the word happy. How happy are the poor in spirit? How happy are the meek? How happy are those who understand the true meaning of suffering? How happy are the merciful? How happy are the pure of heart? How happy are the peacemakers? How happy are those who suffer persecution for the sake of holiness? How happy are those who hunger and thirst after holiness? We have examples of this happiness in the lives of many of the saints. Probably the best known is that of St. Francis of Assisi, who is so well known for his gaiety, his joy, his great, deep, abiding happiness, even in times of intense suffering. Another example that comes to mind is that of St. Thomas More, who joked about the fact that he needed help in getting up to the scaffold, but that he would not need any help in coming down. Or, again, the humor with which St. Lawrence, on his gridiron, told his tormentors to turn him over to the other side since he was well done on the one side. We know the joy and the happiness with which the martyrs in the Colosseum in Rome greeted death and destruction at the hands of the wild beasts, greeted it with joy and happiness, singing songs. There is the story in the 7th chapter of the 2nd book of Maccabees of a mother and 7 sons who also faced death at the hands of the tormentors with great joy and peace and happiness. The very first psalm that we have in the Bible reminds us of the value and the importance of happiness. How happy the person who follows not the counsel of the wicked, nor walks in the way of sinners. Or again, St. Paul, in writing to the Philippians, chapter 4, verse 4, tells us, "Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I repeat, rejoice." Happiness, therefore, is a very essential element of our Christian life. We are not going to do a good job of our ministry, whatever it might be, unless we are reasonably happy and content in our way of life. People will not be attracted to us unless they see that we are happy. It is impossible to hide our unhappiness from others. Without inner peace and contentment, we will give only a half-hearted effort. Today, particularly in our religion, it is impossible to keep people in line through fear, but only through love and through the attractiveness that happiness and joy and fulfillment can give us. People do not stay away from sin today so much because of fear of punishment, but rather because that sin takes away joy and peace and happiness in our lives. And so we must make God and religion attractive to people. And this will be done only if we ourselves are reasonably happy in our life and in our ministry. If, on the other hand, we are bitter and filled with unhappiness, dissatisfied, we will turn people away rather than attract them to God and to religion. What do we mean by happiness? Happiness basically means contentment, fulfillment, a sense of satisfaction in attaining the particular goals that we have set for ourselves. It means that we have a joy in doing things for others and carrying out the three commandments of love of God and neighbor and self. Happiness also implies a sense of accomplishment, a sense of being worthwhile, of being needed, a sense of being important, of having significance. It also means being able to live up to our abilities, being able to use well our talents, and to be able to see, if possible, some good results from it, or at least to have enough faith and hope to believe that those good results will come to us at some future date. In fact, real happiness and peace and contentment here on earth can only occur for a person who believes in life after death. This is especially true for those people who find that their life is filled with tragedy. We all know of such people. Perhaps it may be true of some of us, that nothing seems to go right, that everything that one does seems to end in failure. And there are many people that have this as a lifelong experience from childhood all the way to death. In view of the reality of these tragic lives that we know around us, we see them in prisons, in mental hospitals, as well as outside in the world. We could say that unless we believe in a hereafter, unless we believe that life goes on after death, that we would have to agree that God is not all good. Because so often these tragedies happen to people that, as far as we can judge, was due to no fault whatsoever of their own, or certainly was not entirely due to their own making. And so, if there was nothing more to life except what we can see here on earth between the cradle and the grave, when we come into the presence of one of these tragic lives, and there are many of them around, I think most of us would end up as atheists or at least we would have to change the whole teaching about God that we find in the Gospels and in the whole Bible, both Old Testament and New Testament. And rather, we would end up with some kind either of a dualism of an evil God who has equal power as a good God, or even attributing to the one God both good and evil. However, that is not the Christian God. That is not the God that is revealed to us in the Bible, and certainly not the God that Jesus Christ revealed to us. Rather, that is an all-good and all-loving and all-wise and all-powerful God. And so it is only when we are able to look at life from the viewpoint of eternity, it is only when we look at the whole life, which includes not only the years spent here upon earth, but life forever after death, that we can arrive at a decision that basically happiness is the goal for everyone, and that if we will cooperate and do the best we can to do God's will as it is made known to us, that ultimately happiness will be ours. Having said all of this, we can still say that for most of us, for the average person, it is possible, even here upon earth, to find happiness in our present life. One of the things that needs to be done for this to happen is what might be called a simple lifestyle. We have to be willing to limit our desires so that we do not want every possible thing that attracts us here upon earth. And particularly, we need to study those Beatitudes, those eight ways that Jesus tells us in the Sermon on the Mount that we will attain happiness. That it is by limiting our desires to those Beatitudes that we can expect to find real happiness upon earth. Someone has said that the only things we take with us when we die are the things we have given away. Great happiness can come to us when we carry out this lifestyle in a simple, unselfish, a very giving way. When we are willing to share everything we have with others, that not only means happiness after death, but it also means happiness here on earth. The people who are most happy on earth are the loving people, the people who are constantly going out in service and loving care and concern for others. And regardless of our situation, every one of us is capable of giving something to others. Mother Teresa of Calcutta was once asked by a group of American doctors what could they do when they went back home to carry on something of the same ministry that she was carrying on in Calcutta. Her answer was very simple. She said, smile and keep smiling. Every one of us, by just smiling perhaps at the checkout person in the grocery store or the other people that we meet, by being considerate of other drivers when we are on the highway, by going out in loving care and service to others each day. Through that ministry, we not only will make others happy, but we will make ourselves happy as well. For many people, the only gospel, the only knowledge that they will have, the only contact that they will have with Jesus Christ is what might be called the gospel according to you. Let me read you a poem that expresses that. If no one but you in the world today had tried to live in a Christ-like way, could the rest of the world look close at you and find the path that is straight and true? If none but you in the world so wide had found the Christ for his daily guide, would the things you do and the things you say lead others to live in his blessed way? Ah, friends of the Christ in the world today, there are many who watch you upon your way and look to the things you say and do to measure the Christian standard true. Then guard this treasure that you possess, this power to help and to bless, and live so close to the standard true that others may safely follow you. Many read and admire the gospel of Christ with its love so unfailing and true. But what do they say and what do they think of the gospel according to you? You are writing each day a letter of love. Take care that the writing is true. 'Tis the only gospel that some people will read, the gospel according to you. One of the ways to be happy in this world is to live a life of constant gratitude to God for his many blessings. A way to do this is every morning upon awakening to return thanks to God for all the blessings of one's life, for the sleep that was given, for the opportunities to do good in the past, and for the gift of a new day of life, for new opportunities to practice love and to do good to others. If a person would begin each day with perhaps just 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 minutes of giving thanks to God in a positive, constructive way for every good thing that one can think of, this would color the atmosphere the whole day. Another way of growing in happiness is to have a good sense of humor, particularly in regards to ourselves, is not to take ourselves too seriously, is to realize that we are just one little cog in the whole machinery of God's creation. We are important, but none of us is all important. We must therefore be willing to recognize and accept our limitations, to be content to do little things. We know that Saint Teresa, or Saint Therese of Lisieux, the little flower, has given us a wonderful lesson in this regard. She tells us that early in life she realized that she would never be capable of doing the extraordinary feats of sanctity that she read about in the lives of so many saints. And so she said, I will choose a more simple way of becoming a saint and even a great saint. I will do the little things of life with extraordinary love. We know how successful Therese was in this. I can think of one example of a particular nun in the convent that was of a different temperament from Saint Therese, that Saint Therese found it very difficult to like. However, without telling anybody, she made up her mind to go out in a very special way to show love and concern for that particular nun. She was so successful in this that her own blood sisters began to be jealous, or envious rather, or jealous of the attention that Thérèse was giving to this other sister. And after Thérèse's death, when the sisters were discussing the life of Saint Thérèse, the particular nun who had been the recipient of this special kind of love on the part of Thérèse, she made the remark, she says, "I am certain of one thing, that I gave Thérèse a lot of happiness." And she was right, that Thérèse found great happiness and great joy in being able to overcome her natural dislike for that person and to be able to practice her love so well for that particular person that she was able to cover up any natural antipathy that she might have had toward her. And so we are able to find happiness even in the difficult things of this world. As St. Paul says, "I reckon that the sufferings of this world are as nothing in comparison with the glory that will be revealed to us." Or as he repeats a little later in that same 8th chapter of Romans, "For those who love God, all things work together unto good." In that sense, if we really love God and try to live up to the commandments of love that Jesus Christ has given us, there is no failure in our life. There is no real lasting tragedy. There will be crosses. There will be difficulties. But we can, with faith and hope and trust in God, we can actually conquer them and use them as the very means to bring us great joy and peace and contentment, great fulfillment. In other words, the happiness that the gospel paradoxes of the Beatitudes point out to us. You would think that people who are poor would be unhappy, but Jesus says no. Blessed or happy are the poor in spirit. Happy are those who suffer persecution for the sake of holiness. There is in the book, The Little Flowers of St. Francis, a story of St. Francis of Assisi and Brother Leo. One day they were on a journey in the cold winter with snow on the ground. And St. Francis asked Brother Leo what would he describe as perfect happiness or perfect joy. For Brother Leo gave all kinds of answers, like being able to preach a great sermon and convert many, many people, and so on. But finally, Francis said, no, none of those would give us perfect joy. And so finally, Brother Leo said, "Father, I pray you teach me where I can find perfect joy." But it so happened that they were on their way to a particular religious house where other Franciscans were living. St. Francis answered, "If when we arrive at St. Mary of the Angels Convent, all drenched with rain and trembling with cold, covered with mud and exhausted from hunger, if when we knock at the convent gate, the porter angrily comes out and asks us who we are, and if after we have told him we are two of your brethren, he should answer angrily, 'What you say is not true. You are two impostors, going about to deceive the world and taking the alms of the poor. Begone.' If then he should refuse to open to us and leave us outside exposed to the snow and the rain and suffering from cold and hunger, If we accept this injustice and this cruelty and this contempt with patience, without being ruffled, without murmuring, believing that God has allowed this to happen for our good, oh, Brother Leo, that is perfect joy. The joy that St. Francis is describing here is the joy that the martyrs and other people who have suffered very intensely with faith and hope in God nevertheless experienced, even in the very depths of their torments, in the very depths of their agony and pain. As St. Paul expresses it in the 12th chapter of Romans, be not overcome but by evil, but overcome evil by good. One reason why many people are unhappy is because they have made too high a choice of the goals in life that they hope to attain. In other words, they have been too ambitious in the things that they hope to accomplish. Therefore, if we are to find happiness and contentment, fulfillment in life, we must have a good self-knowledge, a realization of both our limitations as well as our talents. And we must be willing to accept whatever smallness of character or greatness of character that God in His infinite wisdom has seen fit to give to us. We must accept our particular place in the whole mystery of God's kingdom. If we can do that, then we will be able to find happiness, no matter how small or how limited might be our opportunities to do good. We will be able to accept that particular role or vocation and have a sense of accomplishment, a sense of fulfillment, even in doing very little things. And this, of course, was the teaching of Saint Therese, that she would become a great saint by doing the ordinary little things of daily life with extraordinary love. Another secret to happiness is to realize that our life's goal should be concerned primarily with relationships with other people rather than the accomplishment of great things. If we can help even a few people in the course of our life to be more happy, to be more fulfilled, to be more holy, to be more loving, more trustful, more faith, or whatever it might be, then that can be our goal in life, and we can have that sense of fulfillment and satisfaction. I would like then to suggest two things to help you to grow in happiness. First of all, to take very seriously those 8 rules for happiness that the Lord Jesus gives us in the 8 Beatitudes. To try to practice them, to take one at a time and try to become more perfect in carrying out that particular beatitude. And if we will do so, then definitely we will find ourselves growing in happiness. The second thing would be each night to stop and take time to list as many good things that you can think of that has happened to you, first of all, in the previous 24 hours, but secondly, in your whole life. And thirdly, things that are good that have happened to the whole world. For example, the coming of Jesus to earth. Just to make a list of those. Perhaps use a notebook to write down as many good things that you can think of that has happened to you and to the world. And then when you finish that, to go to your Bible and read Psalm 116 with special emphasis upon verse 12. What return can I make to the Lord for all that he has done for me? This is the end of the conference on happiness.